Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Hey. And we're still waiting for our important moment. Ah, there we go. Okay, we got a little bit of it. Okay. So today's Mishnah, we got up to yesterday at the Halakha Mishnah in the middle of daf Ayin Hey Amud Aleph, and we're going to review something that we discussed earlier, which was the case of advance notice hafara. So we had talked earlier about the case, somebody who makes an apotropos, and we spoke about, that was in the context of whether you have to hear the neder before you're made for the neder. I want to talk about kiyum. What's the relationship between kiyum of a neder and hafara of a neder? Because that opens up all kinds of interesting additional issues. So let's talk about what would be if somebody wants to be mekayim, his wife's nedarim, in advance. So Amreli Ishto Kola Nedarim Shetaduri, Mikan Vaad Shavo Mimakom Ploni, Harehen Kayamim Lo Amaklum. Nobody believes that it's possible to be mekayim a neder that doesn't exist. But what about if he says, Harehen Mufarim? Ah, now there we have a machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer says, you can be mefer in advance. V'chachamim omrim eino mufar. So this is now a further extension of the issues that we raised earlier about whether shmi'ah is absolutely essential. So again, we can get around that issue by saying that what you're doing is you're being mefer as soon as it's heard. So maybe it's not a raya in terms of whether you heard it or not. But here the question is, can you prevent them from even being chal? So Rabbi Eliezer says, yes, mufar. And we'll see whether that necessarily means even if they're never chal, or is there another mechanism? V'chachamim omrim eino mefer. Says Rabbi Eliezer, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, isn't it a kal vachomer? If a husband is empowered to be mefer nedarim, which already took effect, isn't it obvious that he can be mefer nedarim that have not taken effect? Shelo bo lechlal isur? Amru lo. So they said to him, look, maybe logically you could say that. However, the Torah makes it very clear, whether you like it or not, that that's not the case. Because we compare in one pasuk, isha yikimenu, the isha yifarenu, which means that whatever is balechlal hakim, balechlal hefer. So if a neder is open to both isha yikimenu and isha yifarenu, then it makes sense. But if you're ready to say that this neder is not included in the possibilities of hakama because it doesn't exist yet, as you just said, you said that a neder that doesn't exist cannot be mukam according to anybody, even according to Rabbi Eliezer. Therefore, you would have to admit that the same thing should be true in terms of this halacha, namely, that even though it seems obvious to you in terms of the logic of the situation, that if you already are able to be made for an existing neder, you should certainly be able to be made for the neder before it even comes into existence, it's not true because of this hekesh in the Torah. Now, the truth is, says the Gemara, it isn't really absolutely clear what Rabbi Eliezer was saying. So let's consider, there's two ways to understand this. One way of understanding it is that Rabbi Eliezer looks at hafara. We spoke about this issue earlier. Is hafara the way in which we remove the ability of a woman to make a neder? Or does it address the neder? So if the hafara is a prevention device in which I'm taking away your rights to make a neder, then fine, okay, so then his kal vachomer seems pretty clear. If even after the neder is chal, you can somehow or other prevent its having any meaning by being made for it, so then kol shekein, you ought to be able to prevent it from ever taking place. Now that would mean that the hafara is telling us that the neder never existed in such a case, if he said it in advance. But there's another way of looking at it. Maybe Rabbi Eliezer agrees that Hafara acts upon the neder. The only thing is that what he says is that the neder is chal and then disappears instantly, because there's no way to look at Hafara as preventing the actual creation of the neder. You could just cause it to pop out of existence. Now, if that's the case, it would explain why there's no problem to Reb Eliezer about the interrelationship of Hafara and Hakama, because he's really not telling you that the Hafara means that the neder doesn't exist. The neder does exist. And therefore, it is, in a sense, also Balach Lal Hakama, in that instant in which it comes into existence and pops out of existence. The problem is that if that's the way that we understand Reb Eliezer, then his Kal Vachomer doesn't seem to make much sense. Because, I mean, his Kal Vachomer is, if I can undo a neder that already exists, so Kol Shekein, I can prevent a neder from happening. But, I mean, if the only way I could do Hafara is by first allowing the neder to exist for a moment and then undoing it, so why is that a Kal Vachomer? It's just, I mean, the fact that it's very fast, I mean, is that really a difference? And that, of course, is going to be what the Gemara examines now. What would the meaning of Rebbe Eliezer's Kal Vachomer be in context of these two ways of looking? But before we think about that, let's think about whether this is all theoretical. Remember that one of the most important elements in terms of the Gemara is very similar to what we recognize today, is something an intelligible scientific statement? Not if you cannot state a difference that is experimentally verifiable. If it won't make any difference at all, then for all intents and purposes, there's no meaning to the statement of X or Y. So oftentimes, I shouldn't say oftentimes, but this is certainly historically a very important issue. Is this considered to be a meaningful statement? Sometimes you'll find two separate explanations for a phenomenon, and because there's no discernible difference between them, we view them as being equivalent. So we always need to explain l'mai nafkamina. So tell me, what difference does it make? The bottom line is we cannot detect a neder that comes into existence and then pops out of existence from a neder that doesn't come into existence, right? No, says the Gemara. Actually, it makes a very macrocosmic difference. And what would that be? Very simple. She goes ahead and she makes this neder, and someone is matfis his status on her neder. So let's say she says Hareini Nazira. Now we're saying she says Hareini Nazira. Perhaps Reb Eliezer means to say that she is a Nazira, but instantly not. So then if the person is matfis on her dibur, and he says, Vani, I want also to be a Nazir the way she is. So in that case, he's being matfis not to her state of being currently, such as, let's just remember to think through the issues that we had. We had what appears to be a similar issue, as Ron points out, when somebody had some basar of shlamim, and this basar of shlamim was already mutter to be eaten because we had already done the zrikas hadam. So, and he says, takes another piece of meat, and he says, I want this meat to be like that meat. So what was our question over there, if you recall? Is that person trying to be matfis in the initial status of what it means to be Boser Shlomim? Or is he trying to be matfis in current status? What is the halacha of this meat? Now, over there, we came to the conclusion that he is talking about current status. So on the surface, this is not a meaningful difference here either, because if he says, and me, so then what do I care whether the neder was instantly chal? Currently, it's post that instant. So therefore, his neder is batal, right? No, not right. Because over there, remember what the case was? He took a piece of meat, brought it next to the Boser Shlomim, and he said, zeh kazeh. So of course, that's different. There we come out that he's talking about current status. If a person is matfis, his naziris, let's say, in that case, to what she said, whatever meant at the time. If this was a Naziris, then it was a Naziris. I don't care how briefly the Naziris was. And therefore, there's no comparison of those two cases. The same thing is true in case you're bothered by the other thing that seems to be the same. And those are, if you recall, chains. Chains of hatvasa. One guy says vani, and then another guy says vani, and then another guy says vani. So remember, over there we said that at whatever point you break the chain, if the middle guy was shoyal, so then from him on down, everybody is not a nazir. The first guy was shoyal, then nobody is not. The last guy, easily. So why isn't that true over here also? If her netter disappears, so then we've got a situation in which all of the chain disappears too. And again, this is a basic error in which you're not thinking. That Mishnah was referring to a case where the person was shoyal on the Naziris, or shoyal on the netter. The din of she'ela to a chacham, remember, is fundamentally different than a fara. She'ela uproots the netter retroactively, so indeed it never existed. That's where we have this chaining problem. But the case of hafara, a baal cannot be oker the netter from the beginning. He only is oker it from this point forward. And therefore, anyone who had been matfis in this previously remains the nazir, and that's the case over here. So therefore, we have a very good nafkamina lahalacha. If somebody was matfis in the words that she said of the naziros, and it had been said in a state of where the husband had previously said, all your naziros and nadarim are canceled, and it makes a big nafkamina. If canceling it means it never came into effect, then this other person's naziris never came into effect. If cancellation means it comes into effect for a second and then goes out of being, so then I only need that split second for her statement to be meaningful enough for me to be matvis in it. Did it cause her to be a nazira for 1/1,000,000th of a second? Yes. So then once it makes me a nazir, what's going to take away my naziris? Certainly not the hafarat habal can have any effect on me. So that's the Gemara's question. How do we view Rebbe Eliezer? So let's see that inside. Kagon de atvis achrina ba'de nidra. Somebody else comes along and is matvis his own status of being a nazir in her acceptance of her own nazirut. So now, Iyamid Chalin, if you're going to say that according to Rebbe Eliezer, the neder is chal for a moment, and then the hafara goes into effect, then it's a proper tvisa. But Iyamid lo chalin, if it never comes into effect, so then there was nothing to be taifis on. Lo ika mashasha. There is nothing extant for the second person to be matvis on. That would be the big nafkamina halacha. My, how then are we meant to understand Rebbe Eliezer? Well, isn't that obvious? I mean, Rebbe Eliezer makes a kal vachomer in the Mishnah. Now, even though the Gemara boils all of this down to the language, the truth is, as the Ran explains, obviously we're talking about not just a language issue, we're talking about the question of the logic behind it. Because look, if Rebbe Eliezer says, my Tashma, Amar Rebbe Eliezer, im hefer nedarim, shebo lechlal isur, lo yefer nedarim, shelobo lechlal isur. So if you do a hafara when the netter already exists, isn't it obvious that the hafara could prevent the netter from coming into existence in the first place? So now, what's the logic behind that? Well, the logic is that we seem to be assuming that hafara does not address the netter. Hafara addresses the ability to create a netter. And therefore, if you can do hafara and undo the power of the netter that was dependent on her making the netter, kol shekein, you can undo its ever being chal in the first place. But if you're going to tell me that the kal vachomer, according to Rebbe Eliezer, is supposed to impact a case where the netter is chal for a moment, and then the hafara makes it go away, so then it's the same as every hafara. Every hafara has a netter that exists, and then it cancels it. What kind of kal vachomer? I don't understand. It's the same case. What do I care how long the netter existed? So the logic of the kal vachomer seems to be telling us there's no escaping the fact that the netter was actually not chal. And therefore, when it says shalom bo lechal iser, it has to mean that they will never come l'idei Ezer. Shemamina lo chalim. So you see from there that according to Rabbi Eliezer, if he's making this Kal v'chomer, the point of the Kal v'chomer is that you could prevent the netter from ever being chal in the first place, and that's the logic of Rabbi Eliezer. No, says the Gemara. Now, wait a minute. That's your assumption. I mean, your assumption of the logic, that's all very nice. I mean, why don't we take a look at what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, and let's be honest and note that it's not what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. It's what you're saying. But what Rabbi Eliezer said was very different. If what Rabbi Eliezer was saying was what you're claiming he's saying, because to you that's logical, then how should it have been phrased in the Mishnah? It should have said that Einan ba'in lidei neder, not shelo ba'u. The point is not that they haven't been chal yet. The point is that they can never be chal because you're preventing them from being chal. I mean, that's the main issue according to your logic. How did Rabbi Eliezer just manage to mess up his language and leave out the main point? And instead says, well, they haven't become usher yet. What do you mean yet? That's the issue. They won't become ushers. Isn't that the whole idea? So it's clear that whether you like it or not, Rabbi Eliezer does not buy into your approach in Rabbi Eliezer. Thank you very much. Okay, so now go back to the drawing board. Let's just see that inside. Mikatani she einan ba'in. Does it say what it claims, you're claiming it should say, that don't come ever to being a netter? It says shelo ba'u. Shelo ba'u means yet. Adayin, they haven't yet. Adayin lobo. So now we have to go back to the drawing board to try to understand what exactly was the point, therefore, of Rebbe Eliezer. Why is it a Kal v'chomer? If the netter has to be chal anyway before the hafara is chal, so then they're just like any other netter, isn't it? No, not necessarily. I mean, consider a similar issue. You have an animal with a mum, right? Now, you try to make this animal kedushas haguf. Well, the mum prevents the kedushas haguf from being chal. On the other hand, if you do not have a mum at the time that you make it kurdish, and then it gets a mum, so then it is a classic case of kedushas haguf with a mum that allows you to be paid at it. So those are two very different situations. I mean, so maybe that's the point of Rebbe Eliezer's logic. If a netter, which has nothing in it that is indicative of any weakening of that netter, is nonetheless cancelable by you, kol shekein, if the weakening is apparent at the beginning, because you've already announced in advance, hey, any babes, don't take that netter too seriously, because I is right here behind you, and I'm nipping at your heels exactly as Doc does to Richie. So what does that do to the netter? Well, it makes the netter weaker at the beginning. And therefore, that may be the full extent of his Kal v'chomer. It doesn't necessarily have to be this major existential issue. Does the netter come into being or doesn't come into being? To be or not to be, asks the netter. That is the question. Stop being so dramatic. It's very simple. Okay, so maybe the language certainly indicates that that's all that Rabbi Eliezer was suggesting. Do we have a real proof? Tashma. Okay, let's take a look at this. In the Braita, Marlem Rebbe Eliezer, really weird. Umab amokum she'ino made for nidriyats. Can a person, after misha nader, after making a nader, can a person cancel his own nadarim? Can a person say, I mean, like he always does, he had charata. It was a big mistake. What an idiot. I can't believe I did that. Okay, thank you very much. Can't believe you did it. So therefore, it's a big mistake, and your netter is batel. No. It's a big mistake, and therefore, you could go to a chacham who can be mevatel it for you. You can't do it yourself. That's the lo yachel devaro. So you can't claim that there's a mistake in the netter once the netter comes into being. But how about if you get up at the beginning of the year and you say in front of three people, any netter that I will make this year, I hereby cancel. So then we could say that if you forgot that tonight, the time that you made the netter is ipso facto a mistake and therefore isn't chal. So what do you see from there? That there's a big difference between the status of something before it ever became chal, such as your Nedarim at the beginning of the year, and the status of the Neder once it already became Chav, such as a normal Neder where you're coming in with a Charata and realizing you're a real total idiot for making the Neder. That doesn't matter. Okay, so then the same thing is true over here. The Torah gives you the right to cancel the Neder of a wife even after she made the Neder. So, Makom, Shemefer Nidre Ishto Mishetidor. So, obviously, you can go ahead and be Mefer Nidre Ishto Ad Shalot Tidor. Now, I mean, the whole logic over here, the whole thrust of the meaning is that in the same way that when you make that t'nai, you prevent the Neder from being Chal because you're saying it's a ta'ut, then that same thing would be true about being made for Nidre Ishto in advance. You're saying that the Neder won't be Chal. I mean, obviously not because of a ta'ut, but in its own terms. So if whatever that power of Hafara is ex post facto, Kol Shekain, it would exist even more powerfully in a case where the Neder has never come into existence yet, right? Okay, but that would prove that the meaning of Rabbi Eliezer's argument is that the Neder is prevented from coming into being, which means that the Hafara through this Kal V'Chomer is a preventive measure as well and doesn't necessarily need to deal with the extant Neder. There you go. So I think that's a pretty good indication, right? So, I mean, it seems to be it would be the same idea. My love. So doesn't this logically mean that Ishto Dumya delay? We're trying to make a comparison between the very different, I mean, it's not the same reality at all, but we're trying to make the comparison between a vaguely comparable issue that in the event that you're even able to prevent something from being chal, obviously through a totally different mechanism, by turning it into a nidre ta'ut because you forgot the time, whatever, but that's not the point. But that it's easier to prevent something from coming into being than it is to cancel it once it already exists, where over there you have to go to a chacham. So then the same thing is true of the wife. It's easier to what? To prevent it from coming into being, thank you, which means that the hafara is to prevent it from coming into being. That's your answer. You wanted to know whether, according to Rebbe Eliezer, is hafara preventing it from coming into being, or does hafara deal with it actually by allowing it to briefly come into being and then by knocking it off? That's the question. All right, here's your answer. So, apparently, my love, the Ishto Dumya Delay, Mahu Dolo Chaylin at all, which is the way that you can get up at the beginning of the year and cancel the Nedarim to come, Af Ishto Nami Dolo Chaylin, it means basically the same idea. Not necessarily, says the Gemara. The logic of Rabbi Eliezer's approach could be a more fundamental and abstract logic rather than necessarily saying that any of the conditions obtain that are similar to the two cases. Because basically, we could still say, Hakadeita, Vahakadeita, each one exists within the set of circumstances that the Torah provides for dealing with that issue. And therefore, they're not literally comparable. So even though we're learning this out of Kal V'Chomer, so to speak, from his own Nedarim to his wife's Nedarim, I mean, there's completely different mechanisms that are going to be applied in the two cases. His own Nedarim could only be effective if they aren't Chal in the first place, because he has no way to ex post facto make a Neder into a Ta'ut. That's true. But by the case of the wife, there's a completely different situation. Because in the case of the wife, the Torah does give you an option. There is some kind of mechanism that's provided about to actually to be made for Nedarim, right? So, okay. Therefore, all we're doing is making a more general, fundamental way of looking at things. And that is that in the same way that Nidre Atzmo, the mechanism for canceling a Neder, whether it's before the Neder is Chal or whether it's after the Neder is Chal, is by essentially turning the Neder into a mistake. So you can make a mistake in advance, which is you set it up in such a way that if I forget the words that I'm saying now, namely that I don't want to make an Neder, then any neder that I make is a mistake, and a neder ta'ut is batul mevuto before it ever becomes a neder. Yes, but Masha Inkin, if I now retroactively recognize the neder as a mistake, I can't, because the neder already exists, and over there I have to go to a chacham, because it says lo yachel devaro, hu eino mochel, but acherim mochlun lo, right? Okay, but that's because the mechanism is the mechanism appropriate to nidrei atzmo. What is that mechanism? Ta'ut. Basically, nidrei ta'ut. That's where the whole thing is linked to. But how about by a wife? What's the mechanism over there? I don't know exactly. I know that the Torah has assigned something called afara. Okay, but does afara work after the neder is in place? Yes. So then does that necessarily mean that it's going to be the same? Is it going to be accurate in the beginning? Of course not. It's not going to be like the heter of a chacham, if I'm mefer. So what makes you think that if I'm going to be mefer before the neder is even chal, that I can prevent it from being chal? That doesn't necessarily follow. It's simply saying that whatever the mechanism is, namely, hafara, magic, pop, 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 pop. Rebbe Eliezer is saying, you don't need to know how it works. You need to first prove that it's easier to apply a mechanism. Abstract that mechanism. Nidrei ta'ut, dinim of hafara, whatever it is. It's always going to be easier to apply a mechanism prior to the chalos of what that mechanism has to address than it is to utilize that mechanism ex post facto. That's all I'm proving. Don't think that you have a right, therefore, to compare it in any way, and that's silly. Okay, so now if that's the case, Rebbe Eliezer is saying something much more fundamental over here. What he is claiming, that it's important to understand that the following, because I don't think that it necessarily comes across to people who learn the Gemara. What we're doing here is setting up the next question. What we're doing here is abstracting Rebbe Eliezer's logic so that it should be saying, if you don't understand this, the next piece of Gemara is going to look insane. It should be a general statement. Any mechanism, whatever it is, let's just call it X. If it's applicable ex post facto, after whatever it addresses, in the case of the woman, it would be the hafara that would be able to address it afterwards. And so on. In the case of the man, it would be the nidrei ta'ut, which cannot be addressed afterwards. So it's always easier to utilize that mechanism before there is the existence of what it needs to address and prevent it than it would be to use it afterwards. But as to how it works, I'm not telling you whether it comes into being for a moment and then becomes part of it. I'm not addressing that issue at all. I'm just addressing kula v'chumra. That's all. It's an abstraction. There's no way to understand the Ran without first understanding this. The next piece of Gemara, now that we understand what we're looking for, which is an abstracted concept of kula v'chumra that has to do with the chalot or non-chalot of something, that is what the Gemara is about to ask. Tashma. Amru lo l'Rabbi Eliezer. Now, if you have a case of a mikvah, would your logic also apply to a mikveh? A mikveh takes someone who's tamei and makes him tahor. Your logic is that if you're in a mikveh before you become tamei, so for sure it will prevent you from becoming tamei. Isn't that true? You said it's an abstract concept, and that basically we can apply any idea and say that it's easier to apply before than it is to apply after. That's what you said. Okay, so I have a great idea. Go to the mikveh, and now the mikveh will prevent you from ever becoming tamei. Why not? Now, that's silly. Because the event hasn't happened. The mikveh doesn't address the event. The mikveh will address the tumah. But how about if I ask you this case? A guy is in the mikveh, and he picks up a sheretz in the mikveh while he's under the water. Did he become tamei? Or does that mikveh prevent the sheretz from being metameian? Huh. Now note that this has very important implications for Hilchos Tshuva. And this was the source of our diyuk in Hilchos Tshuva. that vidui does not mean that you really believe a word of what you're saying. Because as the Gemara puts it, if a person has not let go of his avera and he says vidui, it's as if he was tovel v'sheretz biyado. Now, tovel v'sheretz biyado is this Gemara. And this Gemara means that if you touch a sheretz while you're in the water, don't think the water prevents you from becoming tameh, which according to you, Rebbe Eliezer, it certainly should. You're claiming that it's easier to stop something or to cut it out, even though it hasn't happened yet. And it's certainly easier to do that than to actually address something after it already happened. You say that's a foundational principle in terms of kula v'chumra. Well, it isn't. It has nothing to do with kula v'chumra. It has to do with the way that these mechanisms are given, and therefore the logic doesn't apply at all. What makes you think that the fact that it works in one case and not the other means that it's because it's a kula? That's not true. Unless you understand on a case-by-case basis the way that the mechanism works, you're going to end up with some very silly assumptions. Now, what is the implication for Hilchas Tshuva? That there was a tefillah. What's the tefillah? The vidui is the tefillah. It's just that a tefillah cannot prevent you from becoming tamei again, so to speak. So you're never able to relinquish the tumah because you're still holding on to your chait. If the nature of vidui is that when you say in the vidui, I have let go of my chait, you have to mean that, so then there was no tefillah. What do I have to come on to the din of sheretz biyadai? So you see from there clearly that a vidui does not need to be meant in any way, which sort of takes out that whole vidui about saying a vidui peh. That's the din of vidui. It's supposed to be a vidui peh. So, okay. I mean, maybe it's a little dishonest if you want to include it in your sins, but to make fun of a vidui peh is ridiculous because he has to say the vidui peh, as the Rambam says. It's the whole point is vidui peh. Okay, so we discussed this a lot in Hilchas Tshuva. It has a tremendous implications vis-a-vis Hilchas Tshuva and your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and your Averis and so on. That's very important. But here in our sugya, all we're doing is pointing out to Rebbe Eliezer that this is a little bit silly. Now, the way that the nusach, there are three different nusachot in our sugya. And what our sugya does, the way we have the nusach, the simplest lashon is Mikveh yochiach, ma'aleh tatmeim etumatam, ve'eno matzil ala tahorim militame. That's the simplest girsa in the Gemara, and the Ran brings that girsa, and that's the way that we just explained it. Now, in reality, the girsa that we have is more complex. And the Ran asks, why do we want to have things being more complex? I mean, is this not enough right there on the surface? Have we not successfully shown that the idea of kula v'chumra is unrelated to the applicability of a mechanism under circumstance A or circumstance B? So why make it more complicated? So the Ran explains the reason why we would... You're not concentrating, Ari. Ari, you are not concentrating. So the reason would be, according to the Ran, that what we're trying to show is in multiple ways, by making it even more ridiculous to try to bring a raya from one of these circumstances to another circumstance. So I want to show how you're led to all kinds of endlessly ridiculous assumptions if you keep insisting that there is a connection of kula v'chumra to applicability of mechanisms. That's why we are trying to do this more complexly. The way that the Ran puts it is, you don't just want one horse on your car. You want to increase your horsepower over here. So we're trying to show you how multiple nonsense comes out of this. That's all. Just to make it very clear to you that there are no reasons to make that assumption that Rebbe Eliezer seems to be making. So let's take a look at the gears that we have, because it's way more complicated. And the gears that we have goes like this. This is putting a little square to this side of the raya, right? So you put a little two up on top, or we can even cube it if we want to take the third girsa that the Ran brings. Let's put a square on the raya. Okay, the first raya is the very fact of what I'm telling you, that you know very well, Rabbi Eliezer, that a mikveh cannot prevent somebody from becoming tamei, okay? That's clear. So now, if you want to include that in your supposed logic of kula v'chumra applications, so let me show you how there is no relationship whatsoever between kula v'chumra and application of mechanisms. In the inverse, okay? I'll show you in the inverse now. You'll see it has zero relationship. That's what I need to prove to you. It doesn't matter whether it goes in one direction and it becomes more kal, or it goes in the other direction and becomes more chomer. Okay? Listen to this. Okay, what are you going to do with this? You're ready to agree with me that a mikveh cannot prevent a person from becoming tahor. You're saying, wait, shut up already. I'm ready to give in. No, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to accept your surrender. Okay? I want to show you how ridiculous it is. Let me take another step. So let's say we're agreed on this point about the mikveh. Okay, good. So now let me make a kal v'chomer, okay? If a mikveh, which is a perfectly useful mechanism for taking away tuma from someone who became tamei, is not useful at all for preventing tyra to be chal, what would you say about the following case? A human being goes ahead and he swallows a tamei ring. Okay? Now, when he excretes that tamei ring, is it no longer tamei? No, it's just as tamei as it always was. Makes absolutely no difference. All of you are bekiyim in the power of one. Recognize that this was brought up in the case of the diamond ring in the beautiful Indian woman's tooth. Okay? We know what she'll be doing for 2 weeks afterwards. But in any event, there's no change in the status of the ring. Good. So if that's the case, let me make a kal v'chomer for you. A person who swallows a tohar ring, can he prevent tuma from being chal on this ring? Oh, absolutely not. That's ridiculous. He can't even take the tuma off a ring that was tamei. So if they're judging from the mikveh, that should mean that for sure he can prevent tuma from being chal on something which is tohar, right? But that's not true. Let's imagine a case where the guy swallows the ring, walks into an ohel hames. Now, the ring for sure has not been protected. And yet, what's the din over there? When he excretes the ring is tohar, because something balua cannot be makabel tuma. Now, does that mean that we've been contradicting ourselves? In one case, we look at it as a kula. In one case, we look at it as a chumra. Huh? Is that really what you believe, Rabbi Eliezer? Or you're laughing at me? Oh, come on. How do you compare different mechanisms? Exactly. That's the point that I'm trying to make to you. Don't confuse kula v'chumra and make your universal statements, uma x and kol shekein in a case of minus x. Please. It's irrelevant. On a case-by-case basis, we need to understand the workings of a particular mechanism. There's no such thing as there being a universal sense of something not being kal, therefore it is kal. Maybe it's not addressable at all. That's the point. So therefore, in the same way you can't be make him the netter, I mean, everybody understands that, make him what netter? It isn't kal. Okay, then the same thing is true. I don't understand why you think that this is logical. So again, let's see this approach inside. Umrulo l'ribeliyaz, uma mikvah, shema le'etat me'imi tumatam, is nonetheless not matzil, something that's tohar in the mikvah from becoming tamei. A human being who swallows a tamei ring, which makes absolutely no difference to the ring, and the ring remains tamei after it's excreted. So therefore, you would say, logically speaking, well, it's a kal v'chomer that he cannot save the ring if it were tahar from becoming tamei, right? That's what you're saying. But that is not true. There you go. In any event, from all of this discussion, what are we talking about? We're keeping a standard reference to Rebbe Eliezer's description of his logic. What is that standard reference? prevent it from being affected. Prevent it from being affected means that it's not chal at all. Shma mina lo chaylin. Therefore, all of these discussions with Rebbe Eliezer are predicated on the assumption that what Rebbe Eliezer was trying to say is that if I utilize the mechanism in advance, I prevent it from happening. Because that's the comparison to the mikveh. That's the comparison to the ring. So it becomes completely reasonable that every single time the Rebbe Eliezer keeps bringing a raya, it's always in terms of yes being chal or not being a chal. And that's the answer to your question. Did Rebbe Eliezer mean that it is chal, but then it's instantly canceled? Or did he mean that it isn't chal? Well, I mean, it's clear in this whole discussion that it means it isn't chal.